There's quite a difference between giving and taking. I know it seems more than self-obvious to say that out loud, but really it actually is one of those moments that we have to consider more carefully all the time. There's this distinction that we need to draw between what is given and what is taken. I'd love to illustrate for you some wonderful story from my childhood where I could fill this out, but I can't think of any particular single event. But I can tell you that, you know, I remember there came a certain point where I think it finally came together in my brain. There was something far more rewarding about giving my brother something to play with than screaming at the fact that he took something of mine to play with. I mean, there's that separation that finally occurred, but it really is so critical to us to grow up to be able to give of ourselves. You know, if our employer gives us something, we usually call it a paycheck. If we take from our employer, we usually call that embezzlement. You know, I mean, there's a difference between giving and taking, you know, at a certain basic level. And always struck me as odd, it's such a troubling thing, that the Catholic Church in Germany works on a very different level. In Germany, at the end of the year, when you file your taxes, they ask you to declare a religion on your taxes. And whatever religion you declare, they take a tenth of your income and they give it to that religion. If you declare no religion, they take a tenth of your income and they give it to the state. So one way or another, you don't get a tenth of your income, they make sure of that. But it's troubling because I was in Germany and I see this firsthand. There's no collection in Germany. Nobody gives at all. It's taken from them. And I asked the pastor, and James said, how does that work? I mean, how well is that going? He says, well, everything's paid for. I mean, bills are paid and there's no financial concern, but nobody gives. They don't volunteer, they don't contribute, they don't give at all. It's just taken. And it struck me as such an important thing for us that we need to see this in its own way and how it's expressed. You know, in Maccabees we have the story of the mother with her seven sons. And they really want the mother to give in and surrender God's law. An occupying force controls Israel, they're ruled by a controlling government, and what they want more than anything is to homogenize the entire group so that it all comes down to one thing, so that they're all the same. They're unwilling to see this, so they want the people of God to give up everything that makes them different, even the law of God. So they get them transgender this by getting them to eat a piece of pork. This is the ultimate act of surrender. It seems like a big temptation, you know? They offer you bacon, and they want you to surrender your bacon, you know? It's a terrifying thing. And yet here it is. This realization that they have to stand for something. But at the very core principle of who they are, they have to believe that their faith is important enough not only to live for, but also to die for. And that it informs and influences the things that they do. And they slowly torture death one son after another, from the oldest down to the youngest, in an effort to try and get the mother to give in. If the sons will give in, that's even better. But if they figure if they get the mother to give in, then her sons will follow. And we cut the story short when we read it this morning, but I can tell you that all seven sons give their life for their faith. It's not taken. They give it freely. Because it's something that influences everything else that they do. And I think that's such an important thing for us. This coming Tuesday, important decisions have to be made. And I know that a number of people have come out and said to me that they're a little disappointed that I haven't spoken on politics. And I just assumed that they were critical because they assumed that I would agree with them on their politics. And others have kept their mouth shut, and I assume that they've said less because they're afraid that I'll disagree with them on their politics. So, you know, it's always a little entertaining to see who thinks that they agree with me or not. And I waited till now on purpose. I waited till now on purpose for a couple of reasons. I haven't said anything. First of all, I know there's a large separation of church and state, and I'm not going to tell you to vote for it because that's how the separation of church and state should be. However, I feel it is my responsibility as a pastor to remind all of you that our faith should influence our decisions in life. As much as it comes to how we vote, to how we live, to how we conduct ourselves, to how we engage in the world, our faith should be something that underpins everything else that we live through, that it is, in fact, an influence on how we conduct ourselves. And so, while I would never be so bold as to say that we need to vote for one specific individual or one specific individual party, I'm also not so deluded to think that it isn't our responsibility to know our faith well enough that it influences how it is that we express what is important to us. And at the very heart of what that is a need to hold to our core principle. And I cannot think of a more important core principle than the value and dignity of every human person at every stage of our entire life. And I think that's such an important thing for us. I think it should be such an important guiding presence. It should be such a powerful reminder to us that we should be striving constantly to maintain, uphold, and build up the dignity of each and every human person. To maintain that dignity, because unique among creation, we are made in the image and likeness of God. That unique among creation, we are set apart, made in the image and likeness of God, and are therefore holy. We are called to holiness because we are capable of it. We don't call dogs to holiness. We don't call roosters to holiness. We call dogs to be friends and roosters to be delicious, but we don't call them to holiness. Maybe dogs are delicious too. I haven't tried recently, so I just don't know. But that gets into all kinds of other faux pas in culture, so I won't explore that question today. But we need to maintain the human dignity. We need to insist on building up a human dignity. This occurs at all stages. This occurs with identified questions. This occurs with identified questions when we start to try and soften our blow and tell us that we're easing someone's sadness or easing someone's pain by allowing them to terminate their life early. We're taking away all the possibilities of suffering. And I know it sounds like a good thing. Well, obviously, ending suffering, that's what we want to do. Never underestimate that not all suffering is bad, and that suffering can serve something far greater. Suffering can be something far greater. Because in our capacity to suffer, we realize that the world is bigger than ourselves, and we have become less selfish. In our capacity to suffer, the world becomes bigger than ourselves, and we are able to unite our sufferings to Christ, to offer that greater sacrifice for something bigger than ourselves, for something more important than just ourselves. Consider this for a moment. If we tried to end all suffering, we wouldn't have children, ever. Think of your parents. They suffered for you. If they're sitting here, go ahead, look at your parents. They suffer for you. It's not just a past tense event. They continue to suffer for you because they love you. If they didn't, they'd just throw you out because you have a bunch of children running around the streets. You have a whole new problem to try to deal with. Suffering's not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's actually very necessary for us to not only unite ourselves to the others who suffer, to unite ourselves also to Christ, but to bring us closer into that community of God where we get to know what it is to care about someone. And what a necessary thing that is. And that we maintain and uphold dignity as long as we strive and insist that each and every life is sacred. And I've heard the challenge before. Well, Father, if you think there's such dignity, then go sit with that person while they suffer at the end of their life. I'm telling you right now, I have. And I do. I'm the one that sits there sometimes. I'm the one that witnesses these things. And I'm telling you, it is part of our human experience. We need to insist upon human dignity as it relates to the worker. We need to insist upon upholding and maintaining human dignity as we get noble work with worthy compensation so that we can be something more, so that we can continue to build up. We have documents written upon the necessity of noble work and the uplifting of the worker for literally hundreds of years at this point, insisting upon the necessity of maintaining human dignity by respecting the fact that work is a noble act. We need to insist and strive for and demand respect for human dignity at all stages of life, and it does not become more apparent that at the very beginning stages, we need to insist that all human life is sacred. Not just the ones that we decide we get to want. Not just the ones that we insist are not the ones that inconvenience us. Not just the ones that suit our interests or suit our desires. You know, I love the term unexpected pregnancy, and that is sometimes an occurrence. They do kind of surprise us sometimes. But at the risk of sounding crude, I'm pretty sure there's still an action that precedes the pregnancy that actually has to happen in order to get an unexpected pregnancy. And that part is a whole lot less unexpected. It kind of happens. It requires an action. I know sometimes it results out of an act of violence, but it is an action that happens that kind of comes before the unexpected part. In the history of humanity, I'm pretty sure there's exactly one example of that not happening. So I'm pretty sure our odds are still pretty statistically good on that one. We need to stop divorcing the two ideas, that somehow we can engage in an act that produces something and decide later whether or not we want to accept the consequences of the action, whether or not we want to embrace that part of one act is the result of another. We can't separate these two ideas. We can't insist that our life is somehow more important because we're already alive than to try and preclude the life of another who will invade upon our ability to do whatever it is that we want to do. It is a strange poverty to think that one must die so that we can live the way we want. I know, that's not my quote, that's Mother Teresa. It's the beauty of homilies, you really don't have to quote everybody, so you know, you just sort of say these things. There's no plagiarism in homilies, it's just kind of entertaining that way. If we don't uphold and maintain dignity for the most defenseless of life, when it has no one else to speak for it, it kind of begs the question, what difference does it make if we uphold the dignity of human life elsewhere? And I've heard the argument before, well, if we're not doing good on one end, why should we be so concerned that we have to focus on the other? And I'll tell you just flat out, if we don't have one, we don't have the other. And if that bothers you that much, let's attack it all at once. Let's demand human dignity for each and every life from its earliest stages into its early development through noble work all the way to the end of life. And I can tell you right now, with absolute certainty, that there is nobody on the ticket come this Tuesday that supports all of those things as much as we should be insisting and demanding each and every day of our life. And I say this now knowing that early voting is already open, so that some of you have already voted. I know this for a fact. People are proud of it. They've already voted, and I'm excited for them. Some of you have yet to vote, and that's fantastic too, because there's still time for it, and we should vote. We should absolutely vote. But I wait until some have voted and some have not, on purpose, to remind each and every one of us that this is not something that we get to do just on Tuesday and then forget about. Trust me, I'm as excited as you are that I can stop getting phone calls for political ads and that I can stop seeing the commercials for political ads. But just because the ads will end on television does not change the fact that we live in a democratic society where we have duly elected representatives that we, you and I, need to insist to call to task continuously. That whether they made a promise of something we believe in or they made a promise of something we don't believe in, we need to continually remind them that these are the things that we stand for. These are the things that we believe. These are the things that we hold to and we should insist upon. Not just once a year. Not just once every 4 years when we elect them. Not just once every 6 years when we elect others. But every day. This doesn't end on November. It doesn't just start in January. But it should be something we do in January, and in February, and in March, and so on, and so on. Because we need to insist that we take control of the situation. That we insist that this is something important enough to us that we want something better. I always smile when we say these are the best candidates that we have to offer in order to consider them to lead our country. But I keep trying to point out to people, there were more candidates, but apparently these are the ones that we picked. And if you say, well, I didn't vote for either of them, vote better next time. Not to say that. But we need to insist on something more. We need, as children of God, to demand greater from our government. And I tell you what, politicians break promises all the time. Maybe they didn't come out the way that we needed them to. Maybe we can call them to task after they're elected. Maybe we can remind them that we are the ones who want something more. If we don't say something, then they just get to take it from us. But if we insist on something more, if we demand something greater, then we get to give, then we get to contribute, and we get to take ownership of something better. And if we don't take ownership of something better now, there may not be anything to take ownership of tomorrow at all. People ask me all the time, how did the country get in this condition that it currently is? I smile and remind them, we voted for it. If we want something better, we have to want something better. We have to take action for something greater. So, after Tuesday, some will be upset because their guy didn't win, their girl didn't win. And I'm telling you right now, God's bigger than any single election. And we need to be focused on that in every sense of the word. We also need to continually hold our representatives accountable. Never underestimate that 7 brothers gave their lives for God because they knew that it was more important to stand for something they believe in than to just smile and nod and let everyone think that they have been absorbed. We have to hold to our Catholic principles. We have to insist on our Catholic faith. Because when we forget it, we have nothing left.